It's Wednesday, March 26, 2008, and you're listening to episode 95 of Fear of the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 49 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
My name is Luke.
And my name is Tex.
And we're glad to have Tex back after a little bit of his disappearance and hiatus.
It's always a pleasure.
Yes, and it's a pleasure to have you. Just as a reminder, April 4th through 6th, John and I will be in New York at ICON.
Which ironically, I will not be attending.
That is ironic.
Ironic.
Oh, so funny.
That an eye doctor will not be at ICON.
Oh, thanks for just explaining that. You know, we just touch upon it. It's a little funny. It wasn't a great joke, but the more you explain it, the worse it gets.
I am suffering here listening to you go back and forth.
You know, we haven't had a good punning on here for a long time, and I'm kind of happy about that.
I can see that.
Yeah, me too. No, Dan.
Stop. Just stop. We're not going there. We're done.
All right, but if you're out in the New York area, then please stop by and say hi. Also, we just came to find out that at ICON, they are going to present Fear the Boot with the Robin D. Laws Excellence in Gaming Award.
It's a major award.
It's a major award.
Fragile.
It's going to be a bowling alley. Oh, they wouldn't ship me to a whole bowling alley. They'd ship me the D. But yeah, no, I read Dungeon Master's Guide 2, which Robin Laws contributed to.
And I own Feng Shui.
Which is good. And yeah. So yeah. We're feeling pretty good about that.
Yeah, thank you, Robin D. Laws Award Givers at ICON. That's pretty hot.
Yeah, we're very honored and pleased to have this, and we look forward to accepting it. So once again, if you're out there in the New York area, definitely stop by, say hi, and
watch us accept a major award.
So now I'm curious, Dan, has ICON told you that there's going to be a time limit on your acceptance speech?
Tex does bring up a very good point. Somebody needs a stopwatch for when he's making an acceptance speech.
I'm making the damn acceptance
speech. Somehow I doubt we're going to get an acceptance speech for this one. It's probably just a, hey, congratulations. They hand over something. I don't know. It's pretty, whatever it is, it's cool.
Whatever.
And don't let Dan talk, John.
I'm not going to.
Don't let him make a 3.5-point
statement. I'm making my oratorial debut with this thing.
Couple notes here, website related. First of all, I just realized that my email account has hit its max, which would have occurred, I guess, by the time this drops, it would have been last week, Monday through Thursday.
Which kind of shows how often Dan checks his email.
Well, here's the thing.
Oh, there's a thing here. I want to hear this.
I've been checking it more often than that. I just wasn't paying attention to the size of the mailbox.
You mean the big thing at the top of the screen that said 0 to 100 megabytes?
Yeah, it's full. So if you sent me an email, this would have been last week, Monday through Thursday, and it got bounced back with mailbox full, or didn't get bounced back, but I guarantee you the mailbox was full. Do me a favor and send that again. Also, we'll be posting a Skies of Glass review. We have our first detailed review of Skies of Glass, someone put on their website. We will be posting that. If you have comments on that, please do send them either to Luke or me. If you sent them to me, send them again.
Pretty much send them to the one guy who checks his email multiple times a day. That would be me, since I'm the point of contact.
And along those lines, those of you that have been on our website on the forums and such, we've been having pretty bad lag.
Down.
Particularly on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
And we all know that's the day that Chainmail Bikini updates,
right.
Which is, they're on hiatus. Oddly enough, it's cleared up, which we don't want. We want problems.
Right.
So
in the expectation of having these problems again someday, I am right now in the process of shopping for a dedicated host. Because right now we're on a shared host, which was fine when we just started out, but our hit numbers and such in February were pretty staggering.
We had more hits on our website in February than we did in all of 2007.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
So we have to accommodate that. So
now, and
the geometric growth rate.
But yeah, we are going to get a dedicated host here soon, which should take away those lag problems. So just bear with us for another week or two while we try to find another server and figure out what we're going to do to pay for it and all that stuff.
We could get Johnny G a paper route.
Oh, yeah, about that. Johnny G is going to get a law degree. Then I'll buy all your servers out.
You know, I think actually paperboy is harder than getting a law degree.
There's those people walking with a painted glass in the middle of the street.
Beating paperboy is quite harder than getting a law degree, yes. That obstacle course at the end?
Oh, it's hell.
Oh, that obstacle course is brutal.
I liked the NES version, how that one guy's head was exactly the same color as the bench behind him, so it looked like he had no head, and he was pointing to his non-head as he was trying to cheer.
I love in the Back to the Future NES game how the skateboard portions were exactly like paperboy, only with less throwing.
I don't remember that. I didn't play the Back to the Future NES game. I had taste when I was 5 years old.
Oh, you had taste when you were five. You had to have the Advantage controller to put on turbo to beat one of the parts. That's all I remember.
There were some really horrific movie tie-ins on the NES.
Were there ever?
Oh, yeah.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit was another.
Yes.
I liked that game.
That was awful.
I'll defend Who Framed Roger Rabbit for the NES.
Yo-Noid, not really a movie tie-in.
Yo-Noid was great, and that was not a movie tie-in. That was a Pizza Hut
tie-in. This is the guy telling me I have no taste over here. This is a guy over here defending Yo-Noid.
Yo-Noid was an interesting commentary on good and evil. That green Noid was just like you, only a little different, and that's why you had to kill each other.
The Noid was actually Domino's. That wasn't Pizza Hut. But,
was it?
Yeah.
Semantics. 7-Up, the spot, you know, the
Spot game.
Yeah, I remember that.
I think we devoted entire sections of previous episodes to, like, why video games that tie into movies, that tie into television shows, that tie into books are all typically bad.
Yeah, well, this ties into soda.
Which is even better.
Yeah.
It's too bad you're getting like a Pepsi game where you got to play like Cindy Crawford or somebody chasing Cindy Crawford.
I really can't criticize those because the other day at work, they were giving all of us literally cases of Doritos because Doritos is sponsoring some Xbox Live game. And so everybody's walking out of the cafeteria with like a case of Doritos on his shoulder.
Doritos don't even have a mascot, though.
They need. Well, they used to have Jay Leno.
What kind of video game is Doritos? Well, for a while there, they had.
It was a design your own video game thing. I've seen the ads.
What's her name? Allie,
the drug that makes you poop?
Yes, that's exactly it. It's like the Epicac of your butt. No, that's not what I'm talking about.
What are you talking about?
Some female model for a while there was the spokesmodel for Doritos and had a couple commercials where, like, she was walking through and she'd, like, eat a Doritos and then, like, the sprinklers would kick on or something like that. And
oh, I remember that. I don't remember who it was. Somebody who's fallen into obscurity.
Yeah, exactly. So
so that was a good choice on their part to do the Doritos ad campaign.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe how many laptops we ruined with people eating Doritos in the hall because it kept kicking the sprinklers on.
I can imagine. So what kind of a video game is Doritos tying into?
I have no idea. There was a contest and you were able to submit suggestions. And apparently there was some little thing where the finalists had demos, but I didn't really follow it that closely.
So it wasn't very good.
Do I get to go to the cool ranch and ride horses?
I do know that one of my girlfriend's coworkers has a gamer tag that or a gamer tile on Xbox Live that's actually a Dorito graphic. So apparently there's Dorito gamer picks out there, too.
Why would you be a Dorito when you could be like the fruit effer?
That's mine. I'm actually the fruit effer.
Are you really?
Yeah.
That would be mine if I
For a while there, it was the Burger King for the Eye Tyrant
thing.
The Burger
King is good.
It was just for him from the nose up, so he got his eyes and the crown, so it was the Eye Tyrant. But I liked the fruit effer so much, I went back.
Me too.
I've been tempted to go to the D20, but so many of my gamer friends already have it.
The D20 is passe.
The Penny Arcade gamer picks are widely used.
One day, I'll make $300. And on that day, I'll get an Xbox.
I don't make $300 and somehow I have an Xbox.
Okay.
Let's talk White Wolf.
Again? Are you just going to turn this into Hunter's Hunted again, Dan?
No, absolutely.
The biggest critique about that episode was, boy, Luke sure did have a thing going with White Wolf until somebody brought up Hunter's Hunted and wouldn't get off of it.
I know. No man's a prophet in his hometown. So, but no, we're not going to talk about...
I don't even think that applies.
It really doesn't.
You're just throwing stuff out like a rolling stone gathers two birds.
No, he's trying to get one of us to call his brilliant scriptural references so that we can all admire him. Now, Dan, you were saying...
I was saying that I make brilliant scriptural references.
That nobody can understand or cares about.
We're going to talk about White Wolf here, and it's not going to be about Hunter's Hunted. I instead want to talk about something that you guys have brought to my attention. Graduate your game.
This is awesome.
This is...
And this is the kind of thing we would do.
You know, I don't have an opinion on Graduate Your Game for the simple reason that I need to know more about the people that created it and what the intention was behind it.
Look, I subscribe to the White Wolf Live Journal feed, and I've got a pretty decent feel for at least the personalities these guys put out, and they seem to be a lot like us, and that this thing, which is getting all kinds of flack on the internet for being elitist and just hobnobbing and just, you know, really arrogant. I guarantee you, this is how this came up. These guys were sitting in a meeting one day, and somebody said, man, wouldn't it be funny if we did this? And everybody cracked up and laughed. It got really quiet. One guy goes, no, seriously, that's a pretty good idea. Let's follow that through. And now they're doing it, and all laughing as people are getting mad about it.
I'm going to read, for those of you who haven't heard about this Graduate Your Game thing, I'm going to read just a little bit off the website. I don't want to read this whole article, but let me just read a couple paragraphs here to give you a sense of what they're doing. And I quote now, we are offering 2,500 gamers an opportunity to graduate from their formulaic dungeon raids to a dynamic world where heroes can wield earth-shattering magic and command unstoppable armies right from character creation. Each graduate will receive a free copy of the award-winning Exalted 2nd Edition core book, and in return, we ask they send us their old copy of the Dungeons & Dragons Revised 3rd Edition 3.5 Player's Guide. Participating fans will receive their free copy of Exalted as well as a graduation packet containing a free poster and diploma. supplies these kits, blah, blah, blah.
You know, Gleemax tried this. There was a little pen at Gen Con where you could sacrifice other RPG books to Gleemax.
Skipping down a little bit, why wait until August to play a new fantasy game when you could be exploring epic fantasy reimagined all summer long? We're confident that once you step up and experience Exalted's worlds of legends and larger-than-life heroes, you won't ever want to search another 10x10 room again.
Well, you know, White Wolf, I got a little business advice for you. Pepsi talks about Coke, and Coke talks about Coke. It's good to be Coke. Talk about yourself, man. Stop taking these little digs at wizards, dude.
I gotta say, there's nothing wrong about what they put there. That's a very good description of it.
I don't know. You know, there's part of me that really admires the gall or audacity that they just set forward, and then there's part of me that's a little disgusted by the arrogance, and I'm trying to ambivalence here.
This isn't arrogance. This is these guys having a good time. And
it's funny. It's amusing to read.
Yes, well, this is there's only delicious.
I'll comment on the broader thing here in a second, but there's one comment in there that really irks me, and it's probably not the comment that irks most people. Because most people, the first thing they'd be struck by is the apparent arrogance of it. And that's not what strikes me. What strikes me and annoys me is the comment here, that first sentence or two we read, we are offering gamers an opportunity to graduate from their formulaic dungeon raids to a dynamic world where heroes can wield earth-shattering magic and command unstoppable armies right from character creation. So in other words, you are going to graduate to a better type of gaming by adding more power to your characters. And to me, if you want to graduate your game, graduate it by discovering things like depth and intrigue and better plots, the kinds of things that you can't get from a system.
But Dan, intrigue just pops up in vampire games. It just happens.
It does.
It's
really
a storyteller
does.
System.
Yeah, storyteller.
Well, I was making fun of that.
I know you are.
Okay.
I know, but I'm backing your making fun.
Okay,
being
good,
real.
Good.
No, I'm not backing your making fun. I'm backing your point is true, even though you're making fun of it.
Oh, okay. That's what
dumb.
I thought you were doing.
No, because you're
dumb.
Oh,
go to hell.
You too.
That's the problem. You just don't understand Luke, John.
I don't understand his rage.
I am a mystery. About Exalted, though.
A mystery wrapped in an enigma. Wrapped in a slightly sugary shell.
God.
That's Churchill, Dan. I'm impressed. Luke, you were saying?
I was just saying that Exalted is like, it's pretty much D&D if you started at level 20. And about the same level of complexity as starting at level 22. Yeah. It's pretty much a graduate. Yeah, graduate from algebra right into calculus as you try to wrap your head around this system, ladies and gentlemen.
That's not graduating. That's not gaining maturity. In my mind,
that's playing on a test server and just giving yourself level 100.
That's gaining immaturity. When your idea of increasing your level of gaming is adding more power to your character, you have missed the boat on what deeper gaming is all about.
I don't know if you remember from a few episodes ago when I was talking about how much I love Exalted setting. I love Exalted setting. It's a fantastic setting. But dear Lord, the system is horrid. I mean, absolutely brain-shatteringly horrid.
All right, now let's talk about the more obvious thing here, which is the quote-unquote apparent arrogance of the entire
controversy.
Thing. That actually doesn't bug me.
No, it shouldn't.
You know, because...
It's just like last episode. Are you taking... If this offends you, you're taking gaming way too seriously.
I agree, but there's one of two ways I can look at this. One is that they're serious, in which case this is just funny. Or the other is that they're not serious and they're just having fun at the expense of people who take this too seriously.
Which is also
funny.
Which is what we do.
It's just a question of whether I'm laughing with them or at them. And it sounds like, from what Luke's telling me about these folks...
From my experience.
And I know a couple guys over there. I don't keep up with this the way Luke does. But from everything I know, it sounds like this is something where I don't think they're entirely serious. So they're having fun. And
this sounds like
they're willing to pony up some money to make it happen. And although, I mean, I have to agree with Johnny G's comment that, you know, Pepsi talks about Coke and Coke talks about Coke. But there's also the saying that there's no such thing as bad publicity. So if there's a flap about this, if people are all irate and people are posting all these flames and rants and stuff, I'm sure it's driving up the traffic on their website. It's got to be driving up interest in their product, even if it's negative.
White Wolf's website is horrible.
And even more directly
absolutely
to the point,
horrible.
Now we're talking about it.
I love White Wolf, but their website needs a big redesign.
Well, but here's the thing, though. Do you talk about it to any productive end? Because simply to talk about something is not the same as turning that into actual sales. For example, a lot of people throughout all those child molestation charges were talking about Michael Jackson, and this was not driving up his record sales. It was actually driving them down.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of the same thing here. That if you look at this...
On the flip side, though, R. Kelly pees on somebody, he'll buy 100 million more records.
So, I mean, when people look at this, okay, it's driving traffic to their site and getting people to talk about them, but are people going to say, you know, I might have given this a try, but now I'm so mad at them because of what they said that I'm not going to pick up the
game? I seriously doubt it.
You know, I really doubt that, too. I mean,
that is
you're right
that
awareness of a product may not generally directly translate into sales, but I don't think that there are people out there who are saying, wow, I was going to run out and buy this on release day, but now I'm not because I'm outraged.
Well, release day for Exalted was, well, second edition was like 3 years ago now, and first edition was about 6 or 7 years ago. So this isn't a new system. It's been around. I mean, they're just trying to drum up press for it because I think they have a new line manager now, and it's not going well. A lot of people are upset with the way he's taking things, but that's just my view from aside.
You're not talking about our homie, are you?
No, not Ryan. No, okay. Not at all. I'm talking about, I don't remember who the guy who's in charge of it now is, but all I know is it's a new line director, and I've heard a lot of people complaining about the way things have been since he took over. But he's also doing Scion in the Scion series, so he's got a lot on his plate.
I'm trying to think of any time anybody's moral outrage is actually translated into some actual measurable negative impact against a company. I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, the stories in the news where people were going to boycott Disney or they're going to boycott various gas stations or I just don't think those things have ever really worked. I don't know. Here's my Texas bottom line is they have obviously created interest. They've created hubbub. They've gotten themselves in the news. They've gotten themselves talked about. And I don't really see a negative here.
I tentatively agree with you. The one thing I'm still trying to wrap my head around is just exactly how does this reaction play out? Because, you know, do these moral outrages tend to result in driven down sales? No. But have they? Yes. And in some cases, I think when people create controversy for controversy's sake, an even worse thing happens, which is that they may get kind of a momentary firestorm, but really nothing changes about their company at all.
You know, at this point, for Exalted, okay.
And then they get kicked out of the Ennies.
It's been several years since Exalted was released. People who are going to, you know, people aren't just going to jump on the system because it's new anymore. They're going to be introduced by friends or they're going to find it on their own. So they needed something to kind of light a fire.
Yeah, just like Dancy said, it's all about the GMs hearing what their players want to play or just picking themselves and then going out. Gaming is a very social, very hard to measure thing. Just getting these things in people's minds and getting them talking about it means some Fred talks to some Joe and then he goes and buys the books and runs it.
I also think from their standpoint, now is a good time to do this because with fourth edition coming out.
Yeah, it's true.
A lot of people are going to have 3.5 books. They're just looking to unload.
Mm-hmm.
And
look what happened to Fear the Con.
So
yeah, Grungy Dan sold those all for like $5.
Here's my entire collection. $5 a piece.
Yeah.
It's toilet paper in 3 months. Buy it now.
So, you know, with 3.5, you might as well say, hey, look, send them over to us and we will send you an Exalted book just to try and drive up sales. And see how that plays out. Just get it out there in the community.
Except for some companies who are sticking with 3.5. But that is something we're going to discuss next week. So,
but you don't have to take my word for it.
What?
No, I'm just curious to hear more about this. But
we're having an interview next week. You well know.
And okay. The interview
with an expert about that.
Okay. That's right. I thought you're talking about a regular show topic.
D20 edition's going to last forever. It's going to be the universal system, right? Maybe not.
Speaking, though, of these third-party things, Luke.
Yes. What are you going to talk to me about?
Systemless settings.
Oh, I love systemless settings.
Systemless settings. Now,
this makes me happy. There's a new, I don't want to call it a new trend because it's happened before, but in the last few months, there's been a lot of settings that have been released by a PDF or what have you.
Right.
That don't have systems attached to them, but just kind of advice on how to run them, which, given that I like a generic system that it can adapt to anything, I absolutely love.
Right. And in RPGs, it seems like the more popular trend is to create settingless systems.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. To create systems that have no setting, to put out, I'm going to put out my generic sci-fi setting.
You can convert it to whatever you want to. I mean, every book that's ever been written, every movie that's ever been published is a systemless setting. I mean, then you plug it into Savage
that's
Worlds.
That's kind of a good point, actually.
Well, no.
It's like Savage Worlds' point.
I had already thought about that, but I'm not quite right.
Well, pardon me.
My brain doesn't work right. I'm not going to talk right now. Hey, your point's wrong. I'm Dan.
Good Lord, Luke.
That's all the spite I've been saving up for 40 episodes.
Do you and I need to get some kind of counseling?
Yeah, stop talking to me. You're wrong. I'm going to talk to you first. I'm going to point you first
so
and everything.
So, Dan, what's the difference?
Do you guys need couples counseling?
I'm thinking Luke's got a lot of angst here. He spent all that time and money on a fake-ass doctor's degree.
It hurts so bad. Why am I still on this thing?
Congrats to all the four-year med students who now, a week ago, got matched up on what was last Thursday. I hope you all got what you wanted. They all get matched up with their student hospitals on the same, like, 5 second period. They all get their papers back.
I was not aware of that. So.
Well, my cousin just did it. She got into U of Chicago, which is very, very good. So
cool. Oh, good. I was not aware of that. Yep. But
anyway, medical school's done.
Yes, you're absolutely
making
right,
John. Making fun of Dan, done for now.
Making fun of Luke, also done.
There are
right.
Obviously, any creative work out there offers some kind of a setting that does not necessarily have a system go with it. Movies, books, whatever. But
Savage Harry Potter, Savage Earthbound. I mean, we've all seen this stuff.
Yeah. Savage Luke's House. I mean, but the thing that they don't necessarily
do. You want to talk about Savage My House? Because you know it would be a good campaign setting.
It would be.
Yeah, Savage Mabel. I know. You and I both know.
Especially once you step out the front door.
Savage Luke's neighborhood.
Luke's ghetto.
We could just convert Savage
in the ghetto. It's a bunch of old Italian people and me.
Oh, okay.
It's like, I do agree that any published work of fiction, whether it be film or print or whatever, could be a systemless setting. But I think we've probably delved into this before, but if you play a setting that the players already know or already familiar with, they're going to have certain expectations.
Yeah, and that
can
be good.
So if you were able to get something that they weren't already familiar with, you could probably avoid a lot of the preset expectations the characters would have.
But expectations are actually not a bad thing. It makes it very easy to get in the character and jump in.
But to talk to Texas' point, I think the bigger issue there is the fact that you kind of have to invent your own way to convert this into a role-playing game. And some of that is overcoming those expectations or trying to transmute those expectations so they work in a game that's not a Tour de Realms.
Look.
Well, exactly, because how many games have you found when there is what Dan calls a Tour de Realm, where the players want to go see certain things that they saw in the movie, or they want to go relive moments in the book or whatever. So I think introducing an environment or a setting that the players are not familiar with would probably diminish the chances that the players want to drag the GM somewhere.
Right.
But what's wrong with that? I don't understand the problem here. And this is something that goes back to one of the first things I ever posted at Dan, where I got on Fear the Boot, and you guys were talking about gaming and established settings, is I don't see the problem with that. You have something that everybody understands, has visual reference for, and can relate to. What is the problem with going there, with doing that?
I think it kills creativity because you end up reenacting something that the players have already seen.
You can kill creativity.
You're not reenacting. You don't have the same characters. The GM's not telling the same story. It just takes place in the same
setting. Settle down, Beavis.
But there's an established canon that you're always worried about putting around.
There is that. That's the only thing you got to worry about, if you worry about that at all.
When you're a game, and look, I think, let me. Oops.
All right, Matt.
Let me context this carefully. That I don't, per se, think there's anything wrong with that. If you play a Star Wars game where you happen to run into Han Solo, is there something wrong with that? And the answer is no.
No, but he better be 100 miles away and go behind a door in 2 seconds before jackass can pull his gun out and kill him.
When your game...
Because there's one in your group, I know.
When your game is just basically, to borrow, I think this was John's term for, it's just a wank, where it's like, oh, we're looking at Han Solo now, wank.
Look,
here comes Darth Vader, wank, and we're following the movie plot. If you've ever played a video game, and we talked about this a little earlier, a video game based on a movie, like, for example, the Spider-Man 2 video game. I got it for the PS2, played through it.
Wow.
The best parts of that game were the parts that had nothing to do with the movie. The worst parts of that game were the parts that followed the movie.
Look, but here's the assumption you keep making that is wrong on this. So you've made from the start is that
you're presuming. Go on.
No, you're assuming. I'm presuming we're a team.
Okay,
we're a duo. We're gonna fight crime. Look, it's that where you're following the plots. That you're seeing the major NPCs. That's bad game mastering. You know, if you maybe get a cameo from somebody, you know, just to remind you, hey, look, that's, you know, it's Darth Vader over there. You know, that's okay. You know, but that shouldn't be the emphasis, stuff like that. Like, I've run Star Wars, I've run Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and had some things that remind people, hey, look, you're part of a bigger meta plot, but you're doing your own thing. It's your own world.
Right. That's not an assumption.
In your experience, though, did you have players that kind of had the moth to the flame thing with some of the things that they'd experienced?
Oh, absolutely. Everyone tries to catch up to the G-Man and shoot him, but the game is set up so that you fail. This is your job as the game master.
Yeah, and even on top of that, it's player expectations, setting things to start out with, like, hey, let's play a Star Wars game. Guess what, guys? You're not going to meet Luke. You're not going to get a pet R2-D2. You're not going to get eaten by...
That was the problem with Star Wars Galaxies, the MMO crack at it. They started off giving you your own meta plot, giving you your own little corner of the universe. Advertisers or somebody got a hold of the game design and said, no, these guys have to be on the Millennium Falcon by the 10th minute of the game. And now it sucks.
Yeah, and most games that are run in established settings are not like that.
Well, right, but Luke, I think that's not an assumption on my part. That is what I'm talking about. I don't have a problem.
Your mom's what you're talking about.
I'm talking about your mom now.
Ooh, hot.
But you know, I don't have a problem with a game that's in an established setting or involves established characters from some other plot line. Mm-hmm. My problem, and has been since day one of this show, is with games that follow that, where you play through the movie.
But that's bad GM. That's not the established setting's fault. That's right, a bad GM thing. Right, hey, yeah. Darth Vader's hunting it down.
We're way off on a wild tangent here. So getting back to the original point.
Speaking of which, I want to give props to the two. What brought this up was there are two systemless settings out now. Green Ronin's released Freeport, which is there were the first D20 products, which is a fantastic fantasy pirate setting.
They got a lot of art awards. Am I right?
Yeah, well, they've been publishing stuff since D20 came out. It's been around. And then there's a smaller press setting called Rocket Ship Empires, which is I think really cool. It's basically World War II if it happened in a pulp sci-fi setting. It's kind of crazy and kind of cool. I really like it.
Yeah, so those are the two things that kind of motivated this. But the other point I was trying to get at was, in addition to the possibility of following the setting around, these stories were not created with an RPG in mind. And here, in this case, in the second point, I'm not talking about the setting. I'm talking about its transition to a system. That if you write a book about something or you have a movie about something, you don't necessarily have any easy way to draw into that a balanced, well-orchestrated rule system. And what we see now with these newer, like you said, this has probably been around for a little while, but this recent rush of systemless settings, mm-hmm. that they are not just putting out, you know, here's a setting, you know, adapt this however you want, but they're actually in the back saying, okay, we're making the setting with an RPG in mind, and here's how you could translate that into a good rule system. Here's how you could hook that up. Here's how you could make this or that trade of the system work.
Yeah, but what's more special or different about a good RPG setting that isn't in a well-crafted fantasy universe for use in a book or a movie?
Well, there's really not anything different about it except for the fact that this one allows you to pick whatever system you want. That if you take D&D...
Well, and I'm somewhat intrigued by the idea of this a la carte idea of being able to pick a system and pick a setting independently. And we've talked about this in the past where certain systems, like for example D20, lead themselves to very heroic type games, where there are other systems that, you know, use multi D6 or whatever that tend to be much more simulation type. And so it does give you the flexibility to pick the style of play you want to have. If you want to have something more zany and heroic, or something that's more what Dan would call more of a simulation game, and then you could have that picked a la carte separately, and then you could mate that up to whatever environment or whatever setting you like. That's an interesting prospect I hadn't considered until just now.
And yeah, you know, it's not all heroic. There's some versatility in settings. There's some pretty gritty settings like Mondstadt, which can get you caught down in the mud and even get pretty bloody at times. But we prefer to keep it heroic.
You know, I think there's not a person listening to this show, I would wager, who's not played a bunch of games where they like the system and couldn't stand the setting.
Wait a minute, you've played a bunch of games. What are you talking about?
I've played a ton of games. They're just all out of print. But actually, my repertoire of games I've played is about as mighty as anyone else's. It's just older and in some cases more obscure. But mostly just
older. We have to compare notes sometimes. I think I got you beat.
You might be surprised.
My RPG peen is huge.
I was about to say, and boys, here they whip it.
Fight,
ruler. We haven't quite bickery this episode.
Yeah, well, we had a pitcher of beer apiece before.
Yeah, that's true. So
boys drink beer, then fight, then they drink beer and make up. It makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all good.
So
to build off of Texas' point there, he's just come to this idea that, hey, it's cool to pick a system that gets the feel you want out of a setting, when that's always what I've wanted. You know, ever since I got past, like, oh, D&D is kind of cool. Like, well, hey, if this is a match of system and setting, what if we mix the two up?
Right.
And I get to pick what I want to have. That's awesome.
It's, I guess, just what kind of strikes me as newer about the whole thing is that for a long time, there have been generic systems, GURPS, mm-hmm. the Palladium system, whatever. And the
Palladium is never generic.
Well, it's meant to be, because they use it all across their...
Well, it's Megaversal. It's used for different games, but it's used for specific games.
Anyway.
You're using the term wrong. I'm just calling you out again.
Here we go.
Okay, go on. Just kidding.
Then on the flip side, there are a lot of settings that people may want to use in a role-playing game. But there's not been a whole lot of work up to this point, at least that I've seen, where people are creating settings specifically with a role-playing game in mind, but no specific role-playing game in mind, just some role-playing game in mind.
I've seen it before, but I've not seen it as well-publicized and popular as it seems to be now.
You know, and I think this is
good.
I think this is also great, because there's a lot of people out there that may have a setting And, you know, they don't necessarily have the mind for rules, but they've got a great setting they'd like to put out there. And up to this point, mostly what I've seen people do is, well, in those cases, they grab a generic setting or system, rather, a generic system, but a specific generic system. For example, here's my D20 setting. Well, what if you get someone like me who's not that big of a fan of D20? And
you say, shut up and run your own game and let's play my D20.
Pretty much. That's what a good GM would do.
Well, and I think making a system and making a setting are two very different skills. I mean, there's a lot that goes into making a system that makes sure that there's reasonable character advancement and that there's balance and interclass dependencies and interclass balances.
What, Tex, are you assuming that games need classes?
Have skills that don't necessarily apply to making a setting or an environment. So I think it's kind of neat that it allows people that have creativity in one aspect to go ahead and explore it, even if they don't have the talent in the other areas.
I have a real complicated system called roll this dice. If it's high, you win. All right. If it's low, you lose.
All right, Chad.
Well, I use Savage Worlds or D&D or something around it. But that's basically all we're doing, and then splitting hairs.
Yeah, you know.
Gary Gygax said,
what is that, your current expansion?
The Secret Wiz. And we never let the Game Masters know. They don't need any of our books.
You know what? We were joking around there, but you were so right. Pretty much it is, let's do a randomizer and split hairs from there on. And it all depends on what your flavor of splitting hairs is.
Oh, yeah. I was doing the half joke.
You could just make a coin. You know, on one side you could put pimp, on the other side you could put gimp, and you just flip the coin and see what happens.
Actually, Dave has a D2 coin from a Gen Con a few years ago. It's a D2.
I think Tex has finally come up with a competitor for Monostat.
No, that was the expansion pack. He laid it out.
Pimps and gimps expansion.
All right. We can have a gang war.
It's twice the complexity.
Yeah, but we got to watch your pimps. They're vulnerable to the Monostat. The gimps, not so much, but they can't even fight, so what are you going to do?
Wow. I don't even know where to go with this. And I'm,
you know, as we've mentioned on the show, I'm now playing with Luke's gaming group, which also happens to include Chad.
Playing is a
but
kind of stretch.
Needless to say, pretty much every game we play has Savage Worlds as the setting. But
it's not you're messing everything up. It's a system. You know, the whole
did
two
I say setting?
Yeah.
System.
The whole two
system.
You've been a part of.
Name the system.
I'm sorry we're popular. I'm sorry that everybody likes the game.
But anyway, we are right now playing an Earthdawn game using the Savage World system, so Savage Earthdawn. But there was something that Chad had mentioned in a previous episode that this group does that I had actually not seen myself until this past Sunday that I thought was worth commenting on, which is one of the things they do during character creation is they deal out a hand of magic cards. And
more to the hand.
Well, right, it's a bunch of magic cards. But the thing that I was comparing this to when I was talking to John earlier is I remember back in kindergarten, we used to do this little exercise where the teacher had storyboards. You know, each represented a scene from a story. And sometimes she would put these up and then tell us to write a story that connected them. Or in other cases, she'd give them to us and say, okay, arrange these into a story where you think we have the first event, second event, third event, all the way up to the end. And that's...
It must have been the advanced class.
That, I guess so.
I finger painted in kindergarten.
I ate the finger paint.
Well, I've got all kinds of thoughts on education in general and what they do and don't teach. We'll come back to that on some other episode, maybe a bonus episode. But because I actually had classes in elementary school on reasoning.
Remember that time
injection.
He acted like he was going to go somewhere else, but kept talking about what he was talking about?
Yeah, that was right now.
Yeah.
So. So now
nice.
Going somewhere else for real this time. But anyway, that's kind of what this reminded me of, that we were passed out magic cards, and they took out all of the, like, the generic, like, lands and stupid things like that.
My character is very swampy.
And instead handed out just, like, the monsters.
Why do you keep using they? It's a we thing. We are part of this group.
Because I didn't come up with this. Oh. I'm giving credit where credit's due. Man.
I'm going to play the Channel Fireball character. I win.
No, Dave did carefully select the cards to be inspiring and cool, so he didn't just have crappy magic cards in there. Like,
right. But what they
lightning bolt.
What they end up doing
Dude,
is
lightning bolt is a great card.
I know that's what
one
I was
red mana.
Lightning
damage.
Bolt. Lightning bolt. Lightning bolt. Lightning,
lightning
bolt.
Lightning bolt.
The way this worked out was we drew like three on our own, and then we gave some to each other, and then we were allowed to do trades between us. And in the end, you've got a hand, and you start to work through those, integrating the cards into your background. You can draw whatever you want. You look at the art. You can look at the name. You look at the rules.
Flavor text.
But you
artist name.
Somehow we tried that in one
Rom.
One we couldn't even pronounce, but we would do
artist name.
It was SC.
Actually, somebody took that as their character
copyright
name.
Date.
It was SZCZ. I can't remember from there, but no, it just...
There'll be somebody out there listening who knows, I know that artist, I had my magic cards by that guy.
Yeah, the first four letters of his name were all consonants. It was very distressing to my...
I
want to
play a crawworm that shoots lightning bolts and has a wall of wood.
But I really enjoyed this.
I used that as my senior quote.
I know you did. That's why I mentioned it.
I know, it's terrible, isn't
it? No, it's awesome.
I was a huge dork.
I was going to say that I really liked this for two reasons. First of all, because... it helped take our minds in directions we never would have gone before, because everyone, whether they intend to or not, falls into character ruts. And having something on the outside kind of edging your character a certain direction gives you some new directions to go. But it also helps you with mental block, that if you've just got a creative block where you're not coming up with anything at all, you just don't know what you want to play, this kind of helps you go in that direction.
Well, I mean, that's what I found it helpful for, is that, you know, how many times have I made a character, and I'm the kind of, when I create a character, like I've said, I usually think of one thing that stands out in its history and kind of expand backwards and forwards from that. And that's always served me well in the past, but you know what? Sometimes it, you know, that just puts you in a rut. And with this system, it's like, okay, well, I've picked these cards for myself. Somebody gave me this one. The GM said I had to use this one, and tell you what, this is not what I would have picked, but how can I make this interesting? And it's basically, how can I tell a story with what I have and still get the character I want?
Right. And there's some cool magic cards out there. They can just jump out at you.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
NPC that's what,
based on snapping Drake one time.
let me
flavor text is Drake's claim to be dragon.
Well, and I think it adds an element of reality, because think in your real life that there's certainly things that have happened to you that you couldn't control or that you didn't invite, but they've shaped who you've become or shaped your experiences. So,
well,
I was just thinking, I can control my personality and I can control my reaction in my real life, but I can't necessarily control everything.
And here's
that
the thing,
there
aren't really event cards like that. They're not something to tell you, well, here you were captured by slavers and you must incorporate that.
You're out of mana.
It's more of, there was like, one of the cards I gave Dan was Dwarven Slave, and he had to incorporate that somehow into his backstory, and he could take that any way he wanted to. He's not bound in any way, but somewhere there has to be something with a dwarf who's a slave, or the picture, or something from the card text that would have worked. And,
let me walk you guys through how this worked, just in case you're trying to wrap your mind around
this.
When
are you going
to
give me credit for my awesome idea, by the way? So, when are you going to get to that part?
Which was your
awesome? The tying the backstories together.
I was getting to that.
Good.
I was actually getting to that. All right, but here's the way that it worked.
Mother effing, yeah. Luke's coming up.
No, actually, Dan was going to give you credit for that during the bonus episode where we talk about what we did in the gifted programs in elementary school.
Oh, we were in the gifted programs, were we?
Yeah, we were.
Come on, Luke, let's band together and take our medical
degree.
Guess
what? I was pretty smart. They never let me into gifted.
They didn't let you into doctor school either.
Oh, yeah. I know a guy who got kicked out after he was accepted because he wasn't supposed to be accepted. He had to threaten to sue to get back in.
Did he really?
One of the smartest guys and best doctors in our class, and they tried to screw him over. But that's a whole nother story.
Huh.
WashU sent a letter to every one of its accepted law students saying that they had a full ride this year. One of my buddies was on the list, and he was like, oh my God. And then they sent another letter saying, oh, oops.
Disregard that email.
Yeah. He was not happy.
Oh, wow. Well,
this guy got accepted and then got a call. Like, he had everything planned. He made his deposits, was going to move. It was 3 months later. He was a month away from graduating, and he got a call from somebody like, there's been a mistake.
Yeah, by that point, you've passed up your offers at all the other schools.
Yeah, he's
and
like,
they've really screwed
He's
you.
Like, what, are you kidding? And he had like the dean of his school and all sorts of stuff behind him saying, you can't do this to me. And they finally relented and let him in. And he's like, so he thought everybody would know the first day he was there that he was a guy who wasn't supposed to be there. Of course, nobody knew. It's so funny.
Who knew? Who cares?
Anyway, back to gaming.
But here's the way it worked. There were five players in the game, and Dave, who's the game master, took out 20 of the magic cards, laid them face up in a little 4x5 grid, went around the table, said everybody pick one. And of course, you know, some of them we knew what they were, some of them we did. We just grabbed one at random. Put them all out again, refilled the stack with another, and we could see these were all face up laid out. We could see what they were. Did it a second time. Did this three times, so we each had three cards of our own selection. At that point, then, he resets the stack and now has us give cards to each other. And we did that, I think, for two more cards.
Right. Person to your left and person to your right.
Right. Person to your left and person to your right each picks a card for you. After that, then, Dave went through the deck and said, okay, here's cards I want you to use. And he picked out cards of his own selection and gave them to us. At the very end of this, Chad and I wanted to do something. Luke had a great spin to put on this, which is Chad and I said, well, can we trade cards? Where, you know, I'll give Chad a card, and in return, he has to give me a card back. So we're picking the card out for each other, but it's from our own hand, and the other has no control over what card we're being given. And Luke came with a great idea, said, hey, let's also use these cards to tie our backgrounds together. So, for example, in Chad and I's case, Chad was playing a Nether Mage, And so I gave him a card of like something about ghouls, some kind of like ghoul infestation or something. I'm playing a sword master, and I cannot remember for life of me what the card was that Chad gave to me in return.
The sword trap? Leaning sword?
No, that one I had for myself from the start, but he gave me some kind of a card. And as we were looking through them, we said, okay, well, wait a minute. We can tie these together because, like, I don't know. I'm just going to make something up. Let's say it was like about sieging a castle. It's like, well, maybe Dan was there during a castle siege, and during that castle siege, his character ended up dying, but then was brought back like as a semi-undead or something. That's how our characters knew each other, because I was there to see that happen. And so we use those card trades to actually start tying our backgrounds together until suddenly you've got this spider web. We're all across the table. Everyone, by at least, you know, or at worst, rather, one degree of separation, knows everybody else at the table. And it was a really neat exercise for those two reasons I gave, that it shot right around creative block, and it also took these characters in directions that are outside of our typical ruts. And I think you could do this with any number of things. You could do this with playing cards, obviously, from like Magic or any other collectible card game, like Star Wars or whatever.
And even just random art. I mean, this was taken from, I mean, Dave's heavily modified a system called Everway from way back when that was visionary. I mean, you create a character by, you draw these cards and interpret the designs on the card, which with Magic, you get a lot more options, obviously. And I think it's a lot more interesting, but I think he's taken it to a really cool place.
Yeah, and you're right. You could use any kind of collector card or any kind of art.
Hell, go to Google Images and type in something that's not naughty, and then take pictures from that.
And then weed out the naughty pictures you get anyway.
Make sure your filter's on and you'll be safe.
I remember typing in, this was years ago, but I remember going out to a search engine. This was probably Yahoo because this was pre-Google. And typing in Lords of Magic Special Edition Patch. And my first hit was a porno site. I mean, it's not like I was just typing in something like schoolgirl and I was shocked to get porn. I mean, Lords of Magic Special Edition Patch. And at the time, the very first hit I got back was pornographic.
So Zelda.com was a big hit when I was in sixth grade.
I remember Whitehouse.com.
Yeah, I remember Whitehouse.com.
Yeah, Whitehouse was pretty good too.
I remember being in the library in college when that some girl typed that in and started screaming when it came up. And everybody's like, what's going on? She's like, I typed this in and this came up. It's horrible. We're like,
close
the window. Stop freaking out.
Well, did I tell you guys about when I worked for NATO doing systems engineering? I got this really irate, indignant, huffy letter from some soldier that said I was denying him his constitutional right to talk to his commander-in-chief by obstructing his path over the internet to his commander-in-chief, and I write back, try Whitehouse.com.
Something along those lines, and this we have talked about in a little more depth in previous episodes, is the use of random number systems. Where you don't necessarily, it's more similar because you don't have art where you have such an open interpretation, but the events themselves still give you some amount of interpretation. For example, Palladium has several of these. What's one of your dying character creations? That Traveler?
Traveler.
Mm-hmm. Where you just sit down and roll random events.
You mean life path systems?
Yeah, kind of like that. Well, but life path systems, they don't have to be randomly rolled. Star Trek, for example, has a great life path system where you pick it all.
It's either or. There's a lot of variations.
But I'm talking here about the ones where you get either it's totally random or at least partially random, where you roll, okay, this is an event that occurred. I developed a fear of boats. And you have to work that somehow into your background.
Well, see, the difference here is a lot of those systems where you randomly roll end up having mechanical ties that you have to use. Either, okay, you pick up a phobia, fear of boats, or you have this stat now, or this skill. While with the magic card thing, you develop your character independently.
Right.
You know, all the stuff, you basically create your character, your concept from the magic cards, you know, kind of build from that. And then you create your character from it. You don't have to, nothing there tells you, you have to take this. It lets you draw what you want without being trite. It lets you still have the full creative opportunities.
Oh, but they're not necessarily mechanical perks.
No, they're not at all. This is just inspiration for your character's story and background. And from that, you create your character.
Right.
There's nothing you have to take.
Just as an example, one of the cards that I drew was Leonin Blade Trap. And it's actually supposed to be about a blade trap, like a magic spell of some kind, that impales walking creatures. But looking at the card, there's this picture of this really badass looking goblin or orc or something to that effect. So I ended up writing to my background that one of my life adversaries is this orc whose name is Leonin Blade Trap. And based on the art on the card, kind of sketched out what he was like. And then used some of the other cards, like I drew an imp. So I wrote that in as he has some kind of like little homunculus or something that helps him out and building all this stuff around him. But yeah, it has absolutely no impact rules-wise on the game. Now, it may have impact only as story-wise.
Much, only as much as you want it to, because right. you're still creating a character from, like, I took, one of the hindrances I took was overconfident, because one of the cards I had was basically about being, it was like some sort of like ridiculous bravery. I'm like, well, I'll be overconfident then. That
yeah,
makes sense.
I did that too. I drew narcissism. Yeah. Uh-huh. And so I wrote that my character is a narcissist.
Neither of us had it. We could have worked it in completely differently, but it was a good way. It's like, oh, there's a hindrance I can take. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Or, like, I had Stone Rain, which shows a city with a huge number of things, fiery things falling from the sky. I'm like, oh, well, how about I was on an airship that crashed? That kind of fits with the card art here. And so I worked that into my backstory. I'm a Beastmaster, and I got the Mad Wolf card. So, hey, look, I get a wolf as my companion. Yay me.
What'd you end up doing with the basking lizard that I gave you?
Yeah, I threw that away. You know how we could exchange one? Because it was like, well, I already have the companion I want. The lizard has, there's nothing on this card that I can really work with, so I traded today for one I had to use.
I
ended up being some kind of weird avian that I used for my clan name, I think.
Yeah, and I can't even think what it's called, but the card that I gave him, it wasn't like some...
It was like Root Walla.
Oh, yeah,
lizard.
The Basking Root Walla. Dude, yeah. that card's a power card.
Well, yeah, but the point is
in the actual game.
For your background.
It's kind of stupid,
yeah,
though.
Pointless. It's like, we all said it was like Chatter of the Squirrel.
That's another power card. The Squirrel Tokens?
Nobody wanted Chatter of the Squirrel.
But for a background, I mean, what do you do with
You drop some enchantments down, all of a sudden you got these 4/4 squirrels.
No, that was
stomping.
Dave said his fiance is the only person who he's ever seen take that card and work it into an actual game without it being goofy, like her character, and when they played actual mana burst.
Right. But, you know, if this is something where you're struggling in general with character creation, or you find that the people at your table are always playing the same character, this is a possibility that you could use to break out of character creation ruts. So, and you know, it's relatively cheap, because if you want to do this, even if you're not into Magic or anything like that,
go to eBay and buy a lot for $10 of 100 cards.
Exactly. And mix them up and you've got all you need. Or
ask one of the people in your group. Chances are they have a Magic collection somewhere.
Hundreds of Magic cards they don't even look at.
Go down to your local gaming store, find some one-off, no-name collector card game, and buy 2 starter decks.
Go to magicthegathering.com, whatever the hell it is, and just go.
That's wizards.com.
Wizards and go to the card list and just randomly pick like 10 and print them out, and that way you'll have them handy to pick from.
And take them to a tournament. Everyone will be really happy.
I cut these out and put them on a piece of paper. Put them.
I saw someone do that at a Pokemon tournament.
Seriously?
Yeah, I was at the Gathering Ground for Magic cards, and they were like,
The Gathering Ground. I have fond memories of walking in there looking for the old RPG stuff they had, because they had the stuff from the 80s. I'm like,
and being cursed at by the staff because everyone there's a dick.
And that huge dog.
The huge dog.
Like,
I remember
what the hell is this dog doing here? And why is it looking at me like that? I love animals, and this one's making me feel nuts. And getting somebody's attention to get you checked out, like, hey, I know this place is like a warehouse, but could you please help me? I'm standing here right by your register.
And just for the sake of protecting those that love us, we're talking about Gathering Ground, not Gamer Ground, which was icon.
Gathering Ground was a FLGS here in St. Louis for years.
It was an LGS.
Yeah, LGS. I think it's a long close now, but you could tell these people it moved down by Hampton, but I think it closed.
Did it close after that?
Yeah, because it was right by where I moved to, actually. And it used to run all sorts of CCG tournaments for all ages, and you could tell the staff hated it. Like, why do I got to put up with these screaming children for another 4 hours again on Saturday? This is hell, and yeah. I get paid for it.
Why do I have to go back and find 4 psychotogs for this kid who is paying me money for them? The horror.
I guess that wraps it up for this episode. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Bye.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.